the heart of it.
Roy West kicking in towards the centre. Roy Clark!
A distinctly Tasmanian conversation.
I can feel what it will be like when Tassie plays his first game, and I just...
towards half forward, Stewart flying over the top. Oh, pulled in a beautiful mark.
Well done from Scott. After all, Wilson has got the first goal. Has it gone?
Nichols has had the big ruck with it. Oh! Croswell!
Great to have your company on The Heart of It, a distinctly Tasmanian conversation. On the podcast today, my guest has quite the story of self-discovery. The product of a broken family that bears the wounds of the stolen generation, Mia King has emerged to become one of the AFL women's competition's emerging stars. For most of her childhood, King's Indigenous heritage was unknown to her. Now it's helping to shape her sense of self and providing a sense of purpose. So how did a one-time gymnast discover football, and where does her prodigious talent, fierce attack on the ball and competitiveness come from? This is the story of Mia King.
Yeah, so going back to my junior days playing footy, I actually came pretty late into starting. So I started playing when I was in year 9, year 10. Football wasn't really a thing in Tasmania. There wasn't, you know, pathways, Auskick, things like that. So I always loved sport, came from a sporty background, was always super competitive as a kid. Like anything we did in school, I was always just like competing. I remember me and my other friend Amy, we were always just trying to outdo the guys. Like we just loved it. So I always had that competitive nature. And then, a guy from school, a teacher, asked if I wanted to start playing for East Launceston Junior Football Club, which was a team affiliated with the school. And immediately I was like, yes. I had been playing basketball and gymnastics and, you know, coming from gymnastics, which was quite solo and a lot of pressure. It was so really like a breath of fresh air to be in a team related environment, which was kind of like that individualized pressure taken off because you were part of that team. So I fell in love with it initially. I remember a group of my friends and I signed up. We had no idea how to play the game. Like we were absolutely terrible, but we just really enjoyed kind of learning the game together and going down after school and kicking the footy. I remember down at East Launceston Junior Football, at the Oval, and also NTCA Ground. Deb Reynolds was the coach and she was awesome. And I think that, we kind of just fell in love with learning this game that we knew nothing about. And that was kind of the start of my footy career. And then from there, started to get scouted and had Lee Elder and stuff coming along to games, and then kind of went through like the state team, which I was very lucky enough to... that like women's football started to take off as I was kind of coming late into my, you know, year 10, year 11 years. So, very grateful for that. And then it just kind of progressed into that and, which has led me to now being drafted at, North Melbourne.
So can you remember the first time you picked up a footy and you kicked it and what that was like?
Terrible. I remember when I got drafted and I still had a two-handed ball drop. I remember Scott Gowans was like, all right, we're going to have to work on that. But, definitely didn't have a natural footy kick that, you know, a lot of kids grow up kind of developing through Auskick. So, still tinkering away at, adjusting that ball drop and stuff like that. But, that's why it's just so good to see now. You can see, like, the skill quality of younger girls coming through that have just started at a younger age. They're going to have, great skill ability. Just having those programs down at grassroots footy and starting from a young age, I think that it's just really going to drive the game.
Yeah, you can see it in year on year in the AFLW, the next crop of draftees coming through. You can see the skill level and those ball drops and all of those.
They're looking good, yeah. There's no two-handed ball drops coming coming in. But, it's been great.
We'll talk more about your football and how you got to North Melbourne, but can you take me right back to your childhood? What was it like being a little girl? Where did you grow up in Launceston? What was the family environment like? What were your interests?
Yeah, so I grew up in Launceston initially. I was born in Launceston, and then my mum's partner, actually, we had to move around a fair bit for work. He was an engineer. So we moved to Hobart for a while, actually lived for a few years down there. I loved Hobart. It feels like second home to me. Like all of Tassie does, but loved Hobart. And then we also moved to Orange, New South Wales. I don't know if you've heard of that. So went there for a bit, but we eventually came back down to Tassie and spent pretty much from year one, like up to my schooling years in Tassie and in Launceston. And, you know, it's very Tasmanian. We've got mum and I in one street. My cousin's on like the street horizontal to us, and then their mum and dad, the in-laws, on that street, and then our grandparents were around the corner. So my best friend above me. So it was that very nice community kind of feel. There's always people you know around you. And I remember just going down, kicking the footy with my cousins down at East Launceston Oval. And yeah, that was kind of my childhood. I think that, you know, I just love that kind of Tassie lifestyle of going down, kicking a footy. We also lived up near the gorge for a bit, near West Launceston Oval. And just love getting outdoors, love nature and doing things like that.
Yeah, so there are freedoms that you had growing up in Tassie that maybe a lot of kids don't have,
yeah.
And especially when you have so many family members living in the street, there's always someone to keep an eye on you.
Exactly. No, it definitely had that lovely community feel, and I think that Tassie is such a family-friendly and beautiful place, and even now I still love going back over summers and spending it down there. But, yeah, very grateful to have grown up in a place like it.
Where did you go to school?
Scott Troakburn, yeah. It was a great school. Again, yeah, everyone just felt like family, and the teachers were great. So, yeah.
And you obviously had no vision or no line of sight to footy being an option for you as a young girl. So you gravitated to basketball was one of the sports you talked about. What other sports did you play?
Yeah, so basketball, gymnastics was one of the main ones. Did that from a young age until, like, year six, and then was getting quite high level for that. Ended up breaking my foot at gymnastics, so kind of had a break from that, and then went into basketball and netball. They were the two main ones that I loved. I think I liked basketball a bit more because it had that more freedom with the game, whereas netball was a bit like stopping your zones, and then just loved footy because it was like complete freedom running around. It was like basketball on, you know, a massive scale. So those were the main two, and yeah, I actually did basketball for quite a while. I went away to Nunawading and stuff like that, played state teams, and then it was kind of like that shift between basketball and football. I kind of went more down the football road, and yeah, never looked back.
So your gymnastics, was there an apparatus or a type of gymnastics that you specialised in?
Oh, I think mine was probably the bars. I hated the beam. That was like scary. No, the bars, so there was the bars, vault, floor and the beam, and yeah, they were kind of all pretty spread out. But
so bars is the one where you're literally going round and
round and round
and flipping and
doing all that. Yeah,
that looks very dangerous to me.
I know, looking back I'm like, how did I do that as a little kid? I would not do it now.
So what good you doing it?
Just like flips and jumping from one bar to the other and doing all those those types of things. I honestly don't know. It was at such a young age as well, but yeah, I think that I just kind of lost that passion for gymnastics, and because it is so, you know, pressurized. You kind of go out, you perform on the day, it's just you there. So that's why I just fell in love with footy and running out. It was more social, and for me, I really value like connections and friendships and stuff like that. So playing team sports was definitely a big favourable thing for me compared to gymnastics.
Do you think there were things from those other sporting experiences like gymnastics or basketball that ultimately helped you become a very good footballer?
Yeah, 100%. I talk to people a lot about this. I think that playing, doing gymnastics from a young age definitely taught me a lot of things, and that, you know, strength and qualities that are needed for football, and then as well as basketball, that like competitive nature and the agility and stuff like that. And that's why you see a lot of cross-coders that come from, well, less so now, but still we get Irish girls playing Gaelic football, and we see like those traits that, all right, they've got that speed, they've got that agility. So we've got Erica O'Shea and Neve and Vicky Wall, who's actually representing the Olympics in the rugby, which is pretty cool. But you can see how if you've got those qualities, you can, you know, pick up the footy and kind of adapt that. So yeah, I definitely think that sports and those qualities help in AFL.
You touched on it a little bit before. Lee Elder had an influence in your emergence as a player at a young age. So
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how, once you got into that pathway system in Tassie, how you took the next steps to reach an AFL list?
Yeah, so Lee was great. He obviously started scouting me first, and I've got to mention Guy Chalky Gray was also another one key
I've
in my
playing when I was a kid in the old state league.
Yeah, I actually caught up with him a few weeks ago, helping him coach the. He's coaching the Burnie Dockers in TFL. So that was great fun. It was good catching up with him. But I just love his passion for women's footy, and he's, I reckon, a key contributor to the, you know, women's pathways in Tasmania. So definitely he was another main figure in my AFL career as well. But yeah.
When did you think, actually, I'm not bad at this. I could maybe play this game at the highest level.
I think it was probably year 11 or year 11. Started, doing quite well at East Launceston. That was junior, but it probably wasn't until I played for Launceston Women's, the TSL, and started going away for some state trips as well in year 11, and kind of, I think I got selected for Allies and things like that, and it was starting to look kind of just like that next step, and I was thinking, like, you know, and then I had some meetings with North Melbourne and especially my draft year going through the combine. I think that was when it started to feel pretty real. During my draft year was year 12, and I remember that year was pretty full on trying to do year 12 and then also having, you know, the prospects of playing in AFLW. So, yeah, I think it was that year.
I read that you were determined that you only wanted to go to North Melbourne. Why was that?
Oh, that's correct. I think I was slightly in favour of just because of the Tassie connection and the fact that I had, you know, Dari Bannister, and who was already on the team, and Nicole Brazenahan. So it felt a bit more, you know, like I had that connection to it from home. So I think that, yeah, I only nominated Tasmania, so I would go to the Kangas, and I'm very happy I did so. It feels like a second home for me.
So what's it like when you hear 2019, you get drafted? What's it like when you find out that dream's realised?
Yeah, I think it was a pretty big shock. I actually went over to the combine, and I was there. I mean, the draft day I was there for it was pretty cool. I came back, and I remember all my friends just were at the airport, and it was unreal. So it was so great that they were able there to support me. But yeah, it wasn't until I finished up year 12, and then we had the opportunity to still play footy in Tassie. But so the first year we did it, we actually had a small base of girls down in Hobart and then the main base up here. I think that while I can see the idea behind it, they wanted to be able to have, you know, women playing, you know, footy in their own state, which was great, so they wouldn't have to move. And now it's great that we've got the Tasmanian team, so that can actually happen. It was very hard in my first year trying to build the connections with the girls that were on the mainland, having only seen, like, being able to see them, you know, a couple times, like every fortnight or 3 weeks, not really building those, like, cement at training, you know, how they like it, like where the footy goes and stuff like that. So I think that, yeah, definitely the year after when Darren Crocker came was kind of when it felt like my first proper big move to Melbourne and getting stuck into it down at Arden Street.
So how do you find living in Melbourne, playing footy in Melbourne, compared to growing up in little sleepy Launceston?
Yeah, it's definitely a big change. It's funny, I think I'm starting to get used to it now. I think this is my fifth year of being in Melbourne, and it does feel like home to me now. I think that, yeah, initially it was very daunting coming over, but having, you know, a lot of the Tassie girls here, when I first moved over with Nicole Brazenahan, she was my housemate, so we're kind of going through the same thing. Definitely feeling a lot more at ease now being in Melbourne and loving it. I think that it just kind of feels like home. I've got Arden Street here, and now I've got uni, I've got like just different networks around Melbourne. So yeah, it does feel like second nature, but definitely still getting used to the trams and the traffic. Yeah,
absolutely. I remember when I was working in Hobart, if it took me more than 8 minutes to get from Belrive to the ABC, I'd be absolutely fuming. But it's a different game here, isn't it?
You've got to, everywhere I'm going, it's on Google Maps, and I'm notoriously known for being late, so it's still something that I need to work on.
A lot of the young boys that get drafted, I mean, let's be honest, they're hopeless, really. And I was hopeless when I went to university. And when you're young, you don't really have much of a clue how to look after yourself. How do you go? How did you first go when you came over here?
I think this exactly the same. Luckily for living with Nicole Brazenahan, you know, a lot of the girls used to hear stories of me sleeping in, Nicole having to come downstairs and bring me my bowl of oats and pretty much shove me in the car. So definitely wasn't a morning person, but I've changed that now. But yeah, I think that honestly the support from the club and the girls has definitely led, you know, to who I am today and kind of shaped me. And I'm definitely improving with the communication and growing up and doing all those things. Definitely I think just being around the club and the people here, the role models, I don't know, just being around Emma Carney and people like that who are such leaders, it's pretty cool. I think you kind of just, when you're around that environment, you start to, you know, realise it and kind of take those little traits and attributes and, I guess, grow up in a sense.
You are exposed here to some fantastic role models, aren't you? You mentioned Emma Carney. She's been an All-Australian every year that this AFLW competition has been in existence. You play in the midfield with Jasmine Garner, arguably the best player in the competition. Ashra Dell's in there as well. How much mentorship have you got from those more experienced players?
I think, from the moment I got drafted, all the girls have been great, but especially Emma Carney, she is... was a big mentor for me. She's always like pulling you outside for drills and teaching you little things. And she's got such a coaching, mindset. And I think that it's so great to see her now leading, at North Melbourne, being a player development manager for the men's. It just shows how respected she is in her club and her ability of the game and how much knowledge she has. So, when we're doing drills out there, she's always kind of, just look at it from this way and teaching me little things. And I really value it. And similarly with Jazz Garner and Ash Riddell, playing alongside them in the midfield, the things that you learn off them, they're two amazing players, I reckon, two of the best in the competition alongside Carney. So just playing in such a talented group, I think that you just learn a lot off it, from training week in, week out. And I think that, they're just great mentors and great people, and they're really humble how they go in their everyday life as well.
And your game's really coming along. I mean, you're on the cusp of playing 50 games. Round one next season will be game number 50 for you, which... by my calculations, means you've barely ever missed a game because you've had four seasons in the AFLW now.
Yeah.
And you're averaging 20 possessions a game last year, but I love watching you play. And one element I love about your game is your tackling. I think five times last season you had over 10 tackles in games.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I think it's just, as I touched on earlier, that I've always had this competitiveness drive about me. I think that... in games, I just want to kind of get in and get the footy. I've never been one to kind of shy away. So I think that, it's just this instinctual thing that just got to get the footy and tackle it any way I can. But, I think that it's taken me a few seasons to get the confidence up. And I think that I've developed a really good, we've developed a great midfield cog now. So we kind of all know how we like to play. And I think that it's really evident on the field, and just love playing them with them.
I watch you, and you look fearless to me. The way you attack the ball and you attack the opposition players is—you talk about instinct. Where does that come from? Is it a family trait? Where do you think you got sort of fearless approach?
My grandma's actually quite competitive. Mum would laugh about this. I think I literally called her up the other day. I was like, "Oh, how was your day?" She's in a nursing home back home, and she's like, "Great. I won table tennis and I beat everyone here." And I was like, "That's great, Nana." So she definitely, there's a bit of competitiveness that runs in the family that's been passed on. But I reckon I can't go past Nana.
She sounds like an absolute legend.
Yeah, no, she's great. Love her. Yeah.
You've talked a little bit about the things that have shaped you. That's an ongoing thing for you, isn't it? Because in relatively recent times, you've learnt a lot about your family history that you didn't know about previously. Can you tell me about that? Indigenous heritage?
Growing up in Tassie, Mum kind of, I think year nine, she told me and Molly about our Indigenous ancestry from my father's side. And it was pretty hard because my grandmother was part of the Stolen Generation. So she was forcibly removed as a young girl from her family home in Mataranka. And then Dad was forcibly removed again from her. She was unable to keep him. So there's kind of been two generations of that dislocation. So I think that was definitely a lot to kind of come to terms with. And I think that, it was kind of hard to figure out what to do from there, because when we got in contact with my grandmother, she was quite sick. So we didn't really have the opportunity to learn lots about our cultural heritage and things like that. Mum and Dad also, separated when I was a young girl, and so not having Dad around as well, it was kind of like that, all right, where do me and Molly kind of fit in this picture? We didn't know much about our cultural heritage, but we knew that we had this amazing, beautiful story behind us. So I think it kind of has been this unravelling and learning about this side and our journey. And I think that I've been doing a few talks with, newspapers and stuff like that with North Melbourne, kind of talking about my story and letting people know, what kind of my family's been through, I guess, just to kind of, shed light to our history in Australia and the things that kind of happened there and the impacts that that's had today and still continues to have. So I think that, it's really powerful sharing those stories and letting people know about that. And I recently did a trip up to Wadair, which is a one of the largest Indigenous communities in the Northern Territory. I went with Zoe Savin-Ryan, another North Melbourne player. So her father, her uncle Shane Radbone used to play for Essendon, and he runs some programs up there. We went along with Tipper as well, so that was really cool.
Anthony McDonald Tipper.
Yeah, we're actually heading back in 2 weeks, so I'm really excited to do that. It's just a new world up there. I think that it's very eye-opening and kind of, you know, going to this community and bringing everyone together through this game, football, that we all love. You can see how much that they love it up there, and how they play the footy is just absolutely amazing. If I talk about instinctual, they will pretty much just run and carry. They love attacking the game. So it's very exciting footy to watch.
No, yeah. Two-handed ball drops up there?
No two-handed ball drops, no. And they've got a left foot as well. Yeah. Both sides of the body.
You said it's eye-opening, so can you elaborate on that a little bit, what you saw and what sort of most struck you about that experience?
Yeah, I think it's eye-opening in a sense that before we went over there, there was a lot of talk about how, you know, the community was very violent, and there's been a lot of all of these negative stories, and we didn't really know what to expect, and we're like, all right, well, let's just, you know, see what happens when we got there. I got there and I was like, where's the violence? It was the most beautiful community. Everyone was so welcoming. They did the most amazing welcoming to country for us, all like the community, they all gathered around. It was absolutely beautiful. And I think that it was interesting talking to a lot of the, you know, community up there and the people that work there. Is news articles and reporters are very, you know, eager to report on all the negative things that happen, but they're not so, you know, keen to kind of shed light on all the amazing things that are happening too. So I think that it was eye-opening in that sense, just kind of seeing both parts of how that worked out, but also just eye-opening of how different it is up there and communities. And I think that, you know, the little things for them, it's just so amazing to see them, you know, playing footy in, you know, where they love. And it's just, yeah, it was an unforgettable experience. I loved it.
And in terms of your own personal journey of discovery, what have you learned? You touched on it a little bit. So your grandmother's from the Stolen Generation. Your father was taken as well. How much have you learned about your own culture, where's your tribe, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so when we kind of started to learn about all these amazing, you know, stories, we kind of went down a path of discovery, and Mum got in contact with my Uncle Robbie. So he lives up in Swan Hill, a teacher for Indigenous kind of students up there and a mentor for them. And he's been teaching us a lot, so he knows a lot about, you know, my grandmother having lived with him and growing up with her. So I think that, yeah, my family's from Jawin, which is that's our tribe. It's up in Mataranka in the Northern Territory. You know, he's been teaching us about our totems and things like that, the black cockatoo. So we're kind of on this path of discovery, and I think that, you know, going up to the Northern Territory and seeing it firsthand was amazing. And, you know, I didn't get to go to where my family's from, but my uncle and my sister and I are all looking to do a trip up there to kind of go back and hopefully get in touch with some relatives and some family that are still living up there.
Has it helped you piece a few things together in a way about sort of your personality or your traits or who you are, sort of discovering that there was this other side of the family history?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, and that goes along with the growth that I think that I've had in the last few years, is kind of shaping together who you are and the views and the values and all those things that you kind of believe in. I think it's kind of shaped me and what she believes in and kind of what she wants to do. So I've even applied for a job at, got an interview at Caulfield Grammar next week, being an Indigenous mentor for Indigenous scholarship students. So I think that there's this other side that, you know, being drafted for football kind of has opened up these opportunities to kind of educate and talk about these things that I might not have got. And now I can kind of use this to help younger people coming through that have kind of been through similar things.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think you'd be awesome at that. Indigenous round is obviously a big part of AFL men's competition and AFLW as well, and those magnificent jumpers that you get to pull on with all the awesome Indigenous art. How special is that to you to be part of?
Indigenous round is by far my favourite round. You know, the girls love it. I think that we've had our design artist, Emma Bamblett. She's absolutely amazing. She's like a second mum. She's always like, come into my store, Mia, whenever you want. She's got a beautiful store, Kinya Lurk, out in Preston. But no, she's absolutely unreal. And this year we've got Auntie Joy helping as well. So I think we're going to be sitting down with her and kind of talking through the design. So every year I get super excited because it means, you know, designing another amazing Guernsey and kind of working together as well. You know, Jai Simpkin, we have a great connection as well, and talking about the Guernsey. So it is really, it's beautiful. And I think that it's by far my favourite round.
One last one on your Indigenous heritage. So when you're in grade 9 and you find out that you're actually Indigenous and your family's got this amazing history that you didn't know about, do you sort of own that straight away, or do you think to yourself, do I want to let people into this part of my life? Or how do you construct that? How is it received when those conversations start to happen?
Yeah, I think initially it was, if I'm being completely honest, I did come out and I told people about that kind of side of my heritage, and, you know, it wasn't always received so positively in the hopes that I would. People would kind of go, you know, you can't be, like, you've got red hair, things like that. So that was really hard too. And then obviously Dad wasn't in the picture. So then Molly and I were like, well, we've got this side of our heritage and then we're telling people about it, but people are saying you can't be. So it was kind of like that, well, where do we fit in? So I almost felt myself refrain in some situations of then actually, you know, talking about it and telling people about it. And then, you know, it wasn't until I think I put it on pause for a little bit, you know, year 10, year 11 kind of left it. And then probably wasn't until year 12 or after I started to kind of go back down that path and really, you know, visit it and bring it up and start to learn more about it and talk more about it.
Have you, in your own mind, been able to rationalise why it was that people sort of couldn't accept that?
I think that it's just probably a lack of education. I think that I try to think to myself why they would say that. I think it's almost saying, you know, oh, I'm Indigenous, and people go, you know, there's a stereotype. No, you can't be. And it's not me saying I'm 100% Indigenous, like, this is me. Obviously, we've got, every person's made up of, you know, different things, and, you know, we come from different places and stuff like that. So I think that maybe people were thinking that I'm going, you know, obviously I've got Scottish ancestry, I've got red hair, I don't fit that, you know, certain stereotype. So I think that maybe in their heads that was them rationalising no. So I think for me now moving forward, it's always about educating people that refrain from those initial judgments and expectations and actually just take time to listen to people and their story and then come up with, you know, your own thought patterns from that. So it's just refraining from those initial preconceived ideas.
Yeah, that's really good advice for people. Chatting to you here, I can see how passionate you are about where you come from.
Yeah.
Tassie's obviously a very special place for you.
Yeah, no, it is. I love going home. I, you know, at the end of the season, it's always really sad because it's the footy finishes up, but then I go, all right, time to go home for 3 months and spend Tassie summers down with my friends. So, yeah, I love it down there. It's, yeah, beautiful place.
What do you do in Tassie when you're back home?
We've got a little shack down at the East Coast near Stiglitz. So pretty much just set up there for the 3 months and just spend time at the coast. I've recently been trying to dabble in surfing. I'm not great at it, but it's just so fun. My sister's boyfriend's a great surfer, so they always drag me out. I stay in the whitewash just doing little, catching little waves or trying to, but yeah, I don't venture out past the big wave.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. Yeah, to be continued.
That shack thing's a really kind of unique
Tassie thing,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, I said to someone, shack, and like, what's that, holiday home? I was like, no, it's a shack. What do you mean?
Describe your shack setup then.
Yeah, it's a real shack. It's an old building right on the jetty. So the jetty's pretty much here. Down at the main road is Stiglitz, Akaroa Road. Shack's right here, and then it's got a massive backyard, just typical shack style, and then a massive shed out the back. So, it's very sweet. It's very cute, very little. We're trying to keep that authentic, you know, shack vibe rather than that, all the modern, yeah, kind of styles.
Yeah, there are so many of those across Tasmania. Yeah. They're fantastic, I think, things in the Tasmanian landscape and the Tasmanian story.
Yeah.
In lots of ways. And so many family stories emanate from those experiences in those shack environments.
100%. Yeah, all the memories and stuff like that. It's great.
How did you feel when Tasmania was announced as having the 19th licence in the AFL and that men's and women's teams would be coming in the near future?
Yeah, honestly, so exciting. I think that it's been a long time coming for Tasmania. We've got so much talent that, you know, has been through it and continues to play in both the AFL and AFLW. So I think that finally having our own team is just, I guess, this shining light that people in Tassie are like, all right, well, this is happening. I can play footy in my home state. So I think that it's just going to, you know, contribute to this massive growth of footy and excitement in Tasmania. And even having this clinic in Devonport a few weekends ago for the opening of the NTFL, I think that it was just great to see the atmosphere and how excited people are getting. And that's just going to kind of flow on until, you know, the start of this Tassie team. So definitely very exciting.
I found the response, I mean, I knew it would be popular, but the response almost overwhelming to see the sheer number of people who signed up to memberships instantly. It was like, wow, this is such an endorsement of support for this, this concept.
To see how many people getting around it, it was just amazing. Like people that aren't even from Tasmania, so many people that are just signing up. I think that, you know, it's just, it's great to see. And I think that, yeah, it has been a long time coming, and to kind of have that support shows how much that we've been wanting it. So it was definitely, yeah, really, really exciting, and I'm really excited for the next few years.
And it's a far cry from your experience as a girl, isn't it? Having no access to football basically until you're, you know, sort of in your late teens in a way. Now, a young girl in Tasmania will not only be able to look at AFLW and think that's a pathway, but to have a team in their own backyard, how significant do you think that'll be?
I think, yeah, extremely significant for me not having AFL Auskick. That wasn't that, like, you know, pathway, continual pathway for Auskick and then a team. So now to have all those young pathways for young girls at this clinic, there was, it was amazing to see how many numbers getting down there, their families getting, you know, supporting young girls coming from a young age. I think to have that and now to have this Tassie team, there's, like, there's a connection finally. There's, like, that, you know, missing puzzle in the piece. So I think that to have that, yeah, full connection of Auskick team, there's just a pathway, and you know, now we've got the resources and everything to succeed, so we can really drive, you know, our own careers and what we want to do.
The AFLW at the moment as a competition, it's not I wouldn't say it's in a holding pattern, but the AFL is sort of looking at when to expand again, in terms of number of games per season, when's the right time to expand in terms of the number of teams that come in. How ready do you think that AFLW is to accommodate another team?
I think that, yeah, as I said, I think we're ready. I think that having girls coming through now and seeing them in the list, we've got the young talent coming through. So I think that we're definitely ready. I think initially we expanded very fast to the 18 teams, which was so great to see. But I think numbers dropped off slightly in terms of crowd viewing and things like that. Not sure if it was like skill development or maybe we didn't quite have, you know, someone kind of said it dropped a little bit, dipped, but I think it was because we suddenly welcomed so many teams and maybe didn't have that, like, great, you know, the talent dispersed a little bit, but now it's evening up again. We've got talent coming through, so I think that it's so evenly distributed, and now we're going to be on that upwards trend of just, you know, improvement in games and getting more crowds and things like that. So I think we're definitely ready to welcome another team.
And game time increased last season as well, so the quarters were longer, which... still not as long as an AFL men's match, which makes your 20 possessions on average a game and 8 or 9 tackles a game all the more exceptional. Is that something that you embrace, something that you really wanted to have longer game time?
Yeah, I think that we're just pushing to kind of have that equality between men and women's teams. But I think that, yeah, game time was certainly one of them. And I think the next thing we've kind of got our eyes on is increasing, you know, games in a season. I think that the CBA has been great and we're negotiating at the moment kind of with that, but hopefully we'll get, you know, 11 and 12 this season and then continue to keep going so it ends up being a full season.
Yeah, how does that affect your year in a way, the way you balance things, football and those things that you're pursuing outside of football, like physio, as you say? I mean, you look at an AFL men's player, it really is a year-round job, isn't it? There might be 6 or 7 weeks at the back end of the season before they come back for pre-season. But what, given the shortened season that AFLW players play, what does your year look like?
Yeah, so I think, as I was talking to a few of the girls before, it ends up being quite a long pre-season. We've been doing pre-season for about 5 months now, and then we're finally starting pre-season. So it is a long burn, and I think that it can get pretty, you know, isolating in the aspect of we're doing all this running, all these programs, and then we do pre-season for another 2 months and then just for 10 games. So it goes this massive pre-season and pre-season, then just for 10 games. So the actual season goes so fast. So I think that having extra games would just be great to kind of, you know, it ends up levelling out to, we're pretty much doing 6 or 7 months now like the boys do of full round, but a lot of it's just spent doing off-season training. So I think increasing games will kind of, wouldn't be too far different from that. It would just be more games rather than more training, if that makes sense.
But is that stuff you do as part of your contract, or is that stuff you do to make yourself a better athlete? Is that all wrapped into the CBA for women's players these days?
Yeah, I think so. So I think we get programs that the clubs send us, but obviously it wouldn't be compulsory, but I think that it's self-driven that we want to be better players and come back in the best shape we can. So, it definitely isn't compulsory as such, but it's compulsory.
And you are very motivated naturally to
exactly.
be doing all of that.
Yeah, no, it's great. I just, I spend summer in Tassie. I get back in February and then it's great because just down at Arden, I've been here for the last 2 months and you just come in and do your running with the girls and we've been doing some skills session. It's just great to do it with other people for that, you know, it gets difficult. It gets hard doing those long running sessions. So having people do it, getting a coffee after it just creates that like, all right, we can do this.
And I'm sure the motivation of getting so close to winning a premiership as well is guiding you when it comes to doing those sessions
yeah.
in lots of ways, that determination to make the next step as a team and as a player yourself. What was that grand final experience for you like last season?
Yeah, the grand final was very surreal. I think, you know, first ever grand final I've played in, at an AFLW level. I've been lucky enough to play a few in Tassie, but definitely very different in that respect. I think that, yeah, just that whole week was a big blur for us. I remember coming to the club after the preliminary final against Adelaide, and that whole week we had, you know, news reporters here and things like that. It was just like, what is going on? Like, we felt like royalty. But honestly, the club was so great. The men got behind us and the actual day was amazing. And we fell short ultimately, which we're very disappointed about because we were in it until, you know, three-quarter time. So knowing that it could have gone our way was pretty hard to swallow, but I think that it has given us that hunger for the next step. I think that, you know, our improvement last season, and it kind of all kind of started coming together in the last few games, and we've been building, you know, for seasons now under Darren Crocker, who's been a terrific coach and has got great, you know, skill and knowledge about the game through his experience. So I think that, you know, it was finally all coming together, and we didn't get the winning goal ultimately, which was the premiership. But as I said, I think, yeah, the girls have been stuck down here. We've been training, and I think we've kept the core of our team. We've got, you know, some great new recruits, Libby Birch from Melbourne, great defender. So having, you know, some added people like that, as long with our core group, I think it's going to be a really exciting season. And yeah, we're really excited to see where this goes.
And you've not so long ago signed a new contract at North, so you're locked away until, what, the end of 2026? So,
yeah, 2026, yeah. So another 3 years. It was a no-brainer for me to sign on. I just love the club. It's home here. I think that I can really see the future of, you know, this and, you know, what we're kind of going for and what's in sight. So I think that, yeah, just love it and wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
All right. Fantastic chatting to you, Mia. A couple of quick questions just in closing then.
Yeah.
If your North Melbourne teammates were going down to Tassie for the weekend, where would you say that they absolutely must go?
Probably the east coast of Tasmania. Can't go past Bay of Fires and Coles Bay and Wineglass Bay and all that. Pop into Devil's Corner while you're there. And then in Launceston, Bread and Butter is my go-to, and obviously the Cataract Gorge. And then if you're in Hobart, Mona, the Mountain, Salamanca Markets. Yeah.
That's very good, actually.
Yeah.
It makes me pretty keen.
Yeah, I want to go now.
Right now and go. Your favourite football ground in Tasmania?
Oh, I love North Hobart Oval, and then probably UTAS because I've played a lot of premierships on there and been successful, so it feels like good luck.
Your favourite moment of playing football in Tasmania or favourite experience associated with footy in Tassie?
Probably playing my first AFLW game in Tassie, and then, yeah, probably just my whole juniors and TSL, all of it, just the experiences that I had there and playing premierships and kind of falling in love with the game, I guess.
And Tasmania's AFLW team, not totally sure when it's coming into the competition, but let's say it was coming in tomorrow.
Yeah.
If they had the pick of one player, any player they wanted from the AFLW currently, and they had to go, who would you recommend they select?
That's a really hard one. I'm on the spot.
I've got a contract for you in my folder, actually.
Okay, just don't tell Croc. I don't know. I reckon we've got some great young Tassie talent, but someone in the AFLW right now, I honestly think Daria Bannister. I reckon she's such a versatile, speedy player. She's been unlucky with injuries, but I think that she's just so powerful in front of goals, and she's you know, one of those X-factor players, which she's just, you know, she can pull something out of nothing. So, yeah, probably Daria.
All right, and one last one. We haven't seen the AFLW fixture for next season, but your first game of the year will be game number 50. Where would you like that to be played?
Can't go past Tassie. A home game would be nice. Either Bunsen or UTAS, but hopefully Tassie game. Get the family and friends there.
Any preferred opposition?
Why not Brisbane? A grand final rematch.
Mia King, emerging AFLW star. Proud Jawin woman. Budding surfer. Shack lover. I hope you've enjoyed hearing Mia's Tassie story. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and share with others. I'm Alistair Nicholson. Thanks for listening.